This episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which I was lucky enough to head out to Barcelona and see being unveiled at its launch, and to chat to athletes like Sharon Nakidi, who won the New York Marathon a few years ago, who does all of her easy and steady runs in this pair of shoes. And then we've set Jess from the Running Channel a very specific challenge to train for 12 weeks for her fastest, hopefully ever, 10K, which is also back out in Barcelona.
Yeah, she is loving training in this shoe. And I think it's important as well, because we're so lucky we get to test lots of different shoes, but we do know that some people just want that one pair that will do everything. So Jess has been doing her long runs, interval sessions, and she will be tackling the final 10K in the Under Armour Infinite Elite shoes.
Yeah, big focus on endurance and a brand new foam, which provides extra energy return and looks after you on even your longest runs. So if you want to know more, head to the link in the show notes. This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Andy Badley, a two-time Olympian, just about at peace with the fact that I'm never going to be as fast as I once was.
I don't think you are. And me, Sarah Hartley, I'm an average runner and I am running marathons and trying to get faster each time I run one.
Not average anymore, Sarah. And I'm Rick Kelsey and I am school cross-country captain for Colney Grange Grammar School in the Wirral.
years ago. You are the captain?
Are.
Or you were?
All right, I was. I like to think of myself as life captain.
Yeah. They've retired your jersey.
Yeah, what's it when the Pope stays? Pope Emeritus. I'm Captain Emeritus.
Incredible. Well, Sarah's talked about marathons. We're going to be talking about that today because Sarah has just run London Marathon. So we're going to dive into that and find out exactly how she got on.
Before we do dive in, I think we're going to have to address some things because I have a whole load of notes from the last. So I ran London Marathon. We also had a pop-up at London Marathon, which was incredible.
Mile 27.
Mile 27. It was open from Thursday to Sunday, which meant I had to spend a lot of time with these two idiots. And so I have notes. The first one that I want to talk about is probably one of my favourite moments that has ever happened.
Well, that's a big sell. That's a big sell.
And it was when on Friday night, we were wrapping up our party. You know, the music was flowing, the wine was flowing for Rick.
Always.
And these three people walk into Mile 27 who turn out to be some pacers who were going to be pacing the London Marathon. And we started talking to them, and they'd come over from America and they headed up their own kind of. They headed up the pacing for a race.
Yeah, they go around the whole circuit pacing. They were like it's a really
cool thing. And they swap and they'll go and pace each other's races to like find out what they do, get tips, share advice. Yeah. Anyway, so I thought that this was a perfect opportunity to say to them, oh, Andy needs your advice because he is rubbish at pacing.
Brilliant.
And obviously not everyone knows you're an Olympian. And genuinely, I think the best moment to ever happen was that one of the women was like, well, what did you do? What did you do? And I was like, well, he tried to pace a 40-minute 10K. And what time did you run?
I don't know, low 38 minutes, 38.10.
And she literally just went, no, that's so bad.
she did absolutely lay it justifiably. I think it was bad.
It was so good. And then she just spent the next 5 minutes going like, you know, you're really fast. You've got potential. You just need to get a little bit better.
Andy, and then did she know who you were?
No, she had no idea who he was. It was so good. And then you like properly just took it.
I did take it. I took it because
But then you tried to be like, hey. That, you know, I paced another 10K where I needed to pace 40 minutes and I ran 39, what was it, 55 or something like that. And then she went, no, that's not good either, because you're going to have people behind you and you need to give them a little bit of time to cross the line and still go under.
I missed this conversation. Andy, on the way out, did you go, by the way, these are my two photos of me at the Olympic Games?
No, I didn't. I would never do that anyway, but it did feel like the conversation had gone way too far to be like, you know, I ran in the Olympics.
I just loved it. Your face was just like, oh.
Yeah, I just had to sit and take it for 5 minutes.
That is so funny.
There's another favourite moment for me, which has nothing to do with running, actually. And I made a note of it in my phone. But it's just a Rick special, which I think that regular listeners will enjoy. Yeah. Oh. Actually, all listeners might enjoy. So, Tito is our videographer on the channel and who's paced or run with Sarah before. He's the evil genius who started 1 second behind Sarah.
He's now two minutes quicker than me over a marathon. Yeah.
So his lovely wife came in at the end of our party on Friday night.
Look at Rick's face.
Rick, who I would say sells himself as probably the master of small talk. Like, you know, that's his thing, right?
Mr. Sociable.
Mr. Sociable. Life at the party, he's had a few, one or two glasses of Gavi by this point.
Had a good time.
Yeah. And then you went straight in to Tito's lovely wife for almost the first bit of small talk was, hey, how's it going? Are both your parents dead yet?
I didn't say that.
You did say it.
I said, are both your parents still alive?
Oh, so much better. So much better. What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, how's that a good conversation starter?
This is so out of context. It's unbelievable.
I don't think it is.
There wasn't much context in the actual moment, was there, really?
We were talking about Tito's wife moving over here with her siblings. And I was thinking
from Argentina.
From Argentina. I was thinking the parents must miss them. It's like, so, you know, the context was, oh, who's back in Argentina? And that's
which
where
is
it came
a perfectly
from.
Valid question that you could have asked. Yeah.
The phrasing is very strange.
Yeah. Oh, actually, so good.
She was an absolute belt. You know, we had a belt of a time with her. Also, Mike from The Wirral, who listens to this podcast while he decorates his house.
Oh, nice. I love that.
Ray from Waterford with his plantar fasciitis.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, we chatted to
Ray.
He was a nice guy.
Yep. And Pete Norris, the opera singer, came into the shop.
Yes, he did. That was, he had an incredible voice. Just a speaking voice.
Yeah.
We didn't get him to demonstrate.
Yeah, some fantastic people at Malta.
You were going to get him to demonstrate, weren't you? And then you were so protective of the glass of wine in your hand that you were worried that he was going to shatter it.
Yeah.
Also, special shout out to a guy named Jonathan who came into Mile 27, I think on the Thursday. And I was like, oh, like, are you excited to be running this weekend? And he was like, yeah, really excited. Also, I'm proposing to my girlfriend at the end. Oh. And I literally spent the whole day on Sunday being like, I wonder what happened because I didn't find out. Well, he sent me an Instagram DM.
Oh, yeah.
And she said yes.
Oh, congratulations.
Hang on, when did he do it? Right at the end?
Right at the end. So I've got a picture of him. He is in the foil blankets that you get. He's wearing that as a skirt. He is down on one knee, which is flipping impressive after running a marathon. Everyone around them is just cheering.
Oh my gosh, that's so nice. Also, a little shout out to Ollie, who was one of the bravest guys that we met over the weekend. Ollie had been having some difficulty in his foot for the last couple of weeks. And then he was like, well, I'm going to go and get an MRI scan. Came in from Bristol to London, got an MRI scan on the Saturday morning ahead of running the marathon on the Sunday. Had done a 16-week training block. Turned out he had a hairline fracture that showed up on the MRI on the Saturday morning, which meant the doctor said, listen, whatever you do, do not run the marathon tomorrow.
Oh.
And he was absolutely gutted, but he came in, he was so perky. He's going to try and get a place for next year. He couldn't defer because it was a charity place. And he was worried that he'd raised so much money for his charity and that he was letting people down. Ollie, you have not let people down.
No, absolutely not.
You've done your whole training will be back and do it again next year.
Yeah, and it's so much better to have made that decision than to do what probably a lot of people would have been tempted
which
to do and just run anyway.
Which
would not have ended well. So good decision.
We're going to talk about running your marathon because no one really cares about what me and Rick have been doing in running. We're going to jump straight into that. But I'm going with an early couple of favours. Mm. One is follow this podcast wherever you listen to it.
Yeah.
So click the follow button, then you get notified and it'll come up in your feed and so on whatever podcast app you use. And two is TLC Meets is now live.
The first episode has gone out. So exciting.
We have been chatting to so many amazing people as well, which are coming out every 3 weeks, I think, by the time you hear this.
Yeah, so Colin Jackson's is already out. And then next up is
Ant Bryan. Who ran London Marathon. So if you want to hear, London is so incredibly special for so many different ways, but his story in particular I think just sums up why the marathon is so incredible and how it brings out the very, very best in people.
He's paralyzed down one side of his body and he was going for a world record at the marathon. So the podcast, we'll talk about how and at the end we'll tell you whether or not he did it.
Just before
we move on to Sarah. Don't worry, we'll give you some minutes.
just the one.
Can we just talk a little bit about McFly?
Oh, yeah. So another one of our guests in a future episode is going to be Harry Judd.
Harry Judd from McFly.
How do you feel about Harry Judd, Sarah?
Right, look. Okay, I am.
Rick's making, apparently, he's recreating the noises that Sarah made throughout the interview, where she essentially just whimpered into the microphone.
I didn't even realise I was doing it, but look, so I hate you so much. Look, just to pull out a few excuses of what happened, our chairs were like slightly weirdly angled because we'd obviously like moved all of the podcasts to do it live at London. That is excuse number one. So that meant that I couldn't really see Rick as I'm seeing Rick now, actually. And I was fully angled towards him, which I only realised
that was convenient for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, so convenient.
Really intense
but
eye
he
contact.
Is so lovely and like talks so passionately about running. Like genuinely, I think it's one of the best conversations we've had because it's so relatable. He plays to like millions of people all over the world, but just loves it and loves running for the same reasons that we all do.
And you love him?
I don't look, I genuinely oh god, I hate you both genuinely. TRC meet, like when we do it, because like I know some people fangirl over us, but like really I don't understand why, and like sitting with you two idiots is fine, but the fact that we have actual real life like cool people coming in, it's quite intimidating.
Amazing people with inspirational stories,
including a very exciting episode that we recorded in Mile 27 with Jasmine Paris.
Oh gosh,
so
these are all coming up, so I know, stay tuned. We almost have
so
too much good
she was
stuff.
so calm and she's got this story. I don't want to tease too much, but she's got this story about how she trained for Barclay. About getting up at midnight.
Don't give it away.
I'm not going to give it away.
You're giving it away.
No, getting up at midnight and doing something ridiculous until the sun rises.
Mm. Yeah. Sounds very much like something you'd do. Get up at midnight and do something ridiculous until the sun rises.
only about 3 meters from my back door.
Well, speaking of which, actually, the night before London Marathon for you, Sarah, talk me through what you were doing at about 9 or 10 o'clock at night. Because I was sending you messages just to keep you calm. I didn't want to be wishing you luck or worried about making you think about the race too much. But what were you doing to prepare?
Well, so I went to a wedding the day before.
Oh, perfect preparation.
But then I was home by 8. So I was literally just sat on the sofa. And I was, you know, I'd had a few messages from like everyone else in the Running Channel team. And I was like, I haven't had a message from Andy.
Did I send you a message?
Nope. But I haven't had a message from Rick. And then ping, my phone goes off. What do I get? What do you want when you're like a little bit nervous the day before?
You just want to set your mind off it.
Trying to relax. You want something to be nice and calm. A picture of you two, topless, in a hot tub, drinking Gavi. Like, genuinely, I'm surprised.
Andy broke the no phone rule in the hot tub. And he brought it in just so we could send it to you.
Yeah. We wanted you to know
Thank
that we were thinking of you.
Thank you so much.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, that's not a surprise because we'd had a tough day.
Oh, really tough, guys. Yeah,
what do you mean? We did a whole show for New Balance.
Yeah.
With athletes. We spoke to some... down, we interviewed them, and regular runners, and we talked about the marathon.
And had a little chat.
No, it was an hour long. It was a proper talk. We hosted a whole show on camera.
Oh,
it was
my
full
goodness.
Work.
It was intense.
You were sitting on your sofa.
And then we thought, Sarah would like to be distracted. And I think actually it was preempted. I didn't just hit you with a photo straight off.
I think you did.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I think what I told you was... I told you we were on our way back to Rick's and the hot tub was being warmed up for us. And you were like, you're going in the hot tub? Are you really?
Is that what you think I sound like?
Well, no, I think you sound like this.
when Harry's about.
Then I sent you photographic evidence. I think I followed up with a picture of Rick reclining, eyes closed, with a glass above the water level.
Plastic glass.
Oh, good. Mm. Well, that's the main thing.
Well, that was our prep. So then you got up Sunday morning, marathon morning. You're ready. It was beautiful conditions.
It was
9 degrees. The sun was out. Mm-hmm. There was tiny amounts of wind.
Yeah.
You're on the start line in Greenwich. How are you feeling?
I was feeling pretty calm, actually, to be honest. Like, I think that's the best kind of preamble. That's the best preparation I've ever done going into the race, considering the day before, I was not calm. Like, I woke up, we'd been doing stuff with Mile 27, like, all in the lead up. And then I'd made the decision, like, a few weeks before that actually Saturday, I was going to stay at home, go to this wedding literally just for an hour to see them get married and then come back. But I started to feel really ill on the Saturday. And you know, like when you've just been doing so much that your body then goes like, whoo, we can take a break now. Let's everything go wrong. So I did every single step that you can think of to like try and make this. It was kind of like a bad cold, really. But like you don't want a cold when you're running a marathon. So I was like, right, okay, make myself feel better. And then I woke up on the Sunday and felt absolutely fine. So that was like, then I, because I'd been panicking about that the whole day before, I was like, whoo, okay. Everything is good. Weather is nice. You get to wake up really late if you run London. If you're an elite, maybe not. But like for me, woke up at 7 a.m.
Well, that is pretty civilized.
It was so good. Woke up at 7, ate some breakfast.
And just, sorry, not just made me think of something that the day before, we did speak to this big room of people where we were interviewing these athletes. And Rick decided to give them all a weather forecast for the Sunday morning. he told them, and I think this is a more or less verbatim quote, that it's going to be the best marathon conditions in 30 years.
No, that was true.
Was that actually true?
Yeah, it was actually true.
No, I thought you made that up.
No.
Those 250 people in that room on Piccadilly, they got bang up to date information.
This is like better than the Met. Forecast.
No, that was, I'm not sure it was 30 years. I think it was 20 years. But yeah, weather conditions, perfect. Oh, very, very good.
I was just throwing Rick under the bus, but it turns out
it was actually, it was actually decent.
Even a stop clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
So
savage. But yeah, no, it was very leisurely. You had to, so my start was the red start. So you have to walk up Greenwich Hill, which personally I think is a bit mean, but like did it very leisurely, got into the start pen.
Oh, that's the quite rare start, isn't it? As in rare. It's
the little one.
If you were in a ballot of people went into the marathon, only a small amount of people, so it'd be a small chance that you got into that start. Because people start in Blackheath,
Right. Yeah, it was like, it did feel, I haven't been to a race, I don't think, where you start in different places, and it was quite...
And then you merge, and it's crazy the points where you merge.
Yeah, does it take about 3 miles, 3 miles to merge?
Yeah, so like we started off,
and it's tight.
And Mo knew everyone. Like that also made me calm as well, because we got into the pen, and Mo was like, hey! And like literally all of his friends were just around us. So I was like, oh, well, I don't really need to think about running a marathon. We're just chatting. I was like, hi, nice to meet you. Which is quite nice. Then we started off, and the wave that so me and Mo, when we signed up, we put down a time that was very ambitious in the hope that because it's such a congested race, we wanted to like not be around. Basically, we knew how many people went for 3:30. So we went like a little bit away from that so that we weren't congested around that. We ended up in a pen with the 3:45 pacers.
Yeah.
So when we got in there and we realized that, we were like, okay, well, we're looking to go under that. So we're going to be spending, because the wave before us as well had a 3:45 pacer in there as well. So we were like, okay, we'll spend the race like overtaking people, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
The wave before also had a 3:45 pacer in.
Yeah, I think it was like the back end and the front end.
It's quite confusing, the wave, these pacers, because when I was waiting for you to go past, there was a 3:45 went ahead of a 3:30, and then I think there was like a 3:15 or something. Don't know what he was doing.
Well, because they all start off at different times. Right. But like the merge point is, it's fine. Like you all merge together, but it's quite weird because you spend the first 5K kind of settling into the pace, settling into the race, soaking up the crowds, which are literally there from the first step, which is so nice. And then suddenly you merge about 5K in.
It's Woolwich,
and it's like, whoa, where are all these people come from? Yeah. I actually quite liked the race environment that I was in. And then from there you go from, okay, it's not just a few of us on the course anymore. It's double, triple the amount. Then you get closer towards Cutty Sark, and it just... It's
so tightly packed. It's so
tight.
I was scanning because obviously there was no signal anywhere on the course, basically. So you just have to scan the crowd. So I was just looking for you standing up because you've got nothing. And I had two. There were two Sarah Hartleys running.
Yeah.
And the second Sarah Hartley was about 25 minutes behind you. So I was guessing that you were the first Sarah Hartley.
Correct.
So I was just scan, and the intensity. Thickness of the crowd. I was kind of looking for Mo's hair, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Trying to find you.
And then, it was so long now.
And then spotting you. I was like, just screaming when I saw you.
Yeah.
Still can't believe you got out on the course.
I know. You weren't where you were supposed to be, though. Like, it was quite a fluke that you were. But to be fair, it was so hard to get where you were
supposed to be. I've never seen it so rammed.
No.
So I came out of Cutty Sark DLR. So if you ever do the London Marathon, this is kind of where a lot of people go. And basically you can't cross the road. There are no crossing points. You have to walk up around Cutty Sark and then down Woolwich Road towards Charlton to get across. But so also, that had taken me about an hour and a half to get to that point.
But apparently as well, like later in the day, apparently they closed the DLR. That's how busy it was.
Yeah.
Because our like, we'd made an ambitious plan for our two film teams to get all around. And that was very quickly thrown in the bin because it was, I don't think London has ever been that busy.
I've never seen it like that.
To someone afterwards and we were talking about, so there are a few iconic moments in London. You've got Mile 6 around Cutty Sark, this like famous old ship, so you can see it as you come in. And then you've got Tower Bridge and then Rainbow Road, or Rainbow Row was another one that I'd heard of that was like incredible. So those are the kind of three points that I was looking forward to. Hit the first one, Mile 6. And I was chatting to someone afterwards and we were like, it was almost, in a good way, it was almost too much.
Yeah.
Like it was its own, it's what I can describe as when you see celebrities getting like hounded by the press and there's just like loads of flashing lights in their eyes and like loads of stuff going on. That's kind of what it feels like. And it's amazing because you're running through it, but it is a bit like...
intense. Yeah.
We were talking about this as to... because you'd said your A goal was to enjoy it and to soak up that incredible atmosphere.
Because
yes, you can definitely run fast at London. Mm-hmm. But if I contrast your experience and my experience of being on the course with also my experience in Valencia, where I... like, I don't really remember that much of it. And it wasn't bad atmosphere at all. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. It was, but I don't really remember any particular landmarks. I was really focused on my pacing and running as you know, my first marathon, but I had a very clear pace goal in mind.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, there was no point until the last 2 or 3K where you'd be like, oh my God, this is like overwhelmingly loud. And that probably allowed me to just drift. There were actually quite a lot of nice, quiet moments of contemplation.
I'm in Valencia.
Yes, exactly. But I was going to contrast that with, what did you think of London? Like, is it noisy the whole way?
Yeah, there's a section. So
the tunnel.
You remember how I talked about the first half of a marathon is boring? I take that back. Like I almost got a bit sad when I hit Tower Bridge because I was like, oh, this is going too fast. Like, I don't want this to end. Oh, wow. Then it got worse.
Should have gone for an 8-hour marathon.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of, because you have that 6-mile point and then you have the Tower Bridge is actually 12 miles. It's not halfway. Because people say don't treat it as halfway because halfway in a marathon is not halfway. But anyway, even if you were, Tower Bridge is significantly under halfway. So like, it felt like it was going really quickly. And Tower Bridge as well. I have a really clear memory of Cutty Sark. Tower Bridge, I think I was just... because that is the moment where if you talk to someone about London, they're like, soak that up. Don't just soak it up. And it's almost like it's over too quickly because you're like, oh my gosh, I'm on Tower Bridge. This is incredible. There's so many crowds. There's so many people. And then I was starting to see there was like incredible support from people running Channel Community. I had written Sarah on my bib, so like it just felt, and Mo knows literally every person in London, so like there was so many people cheering for us. And then I saw two of my best mates who had the worst cheering plan ever, but it actually turned out well for them. The day before I was like, where are you gonna be and I'll look out for you, and they're like, oh, I don't know, somewhere around Westminster, and they ended up on Tower Bridge, and I saw them at the end and was like, oh, I've actually seen people. It's so exciting. It was cool.
I was gonna ask about what I didn't realise until I did mine, the first one, was how much stuff you got to think about during a marathon.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking about your pacing. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about probably, you're trying to like do a bit of an assessment of how you feel. Mm. Then you've got the mentality of like, try not to really think about it at all until halfway or a bit further in. Then you've got your gels and the drinks and the drink stations. And maybe like, do I need the toilet? Or like, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
How... and then you're saying there's all of this like extra stimulus from people like shouting and stuff. How was it overwhelming? How does it feel?
I think that's why it went quite quickly, because there was... so I peed for the first time in a marathon. It's not as bad as you think. However, top tip, lock the door.
Oh, yeah, because people trying to get in.
Someone walked in on me weeing in a marathon, which was a low moment in the marathon.
This is the glamour.
This is so good.
Is what people are here for.
What mile did you go for a pee?
Mile 8. Because
that's quite early.
It was early.
About 15.
Basically, I had... before the marathon had started, I'd had about two bottles worth of electrolytes, because I was like, the one thing I don't want to happen is to be dehydrated, because I know that I've done that before. I don't want to be there again. And then I think I just like hadn't timed my like weeing before the race properly. And Mo went for a wee probably at like mile 4, mile 5 maybe. And then after he'd done it, I was like, oh, I'm so jealous.
So did you, was it in now or was there a queue?
No, it was literally in and out. So I was like,
how long do you think you lost?
Well, so that kilometer, you can literally, if you go into my splits, you can see it. That kilometer was 5:41.
And so that's not that much off. Your splits were amazing.
It was 20 seconds I took to pee, which I'm actually amazing. Quite proud of.
We should also talk about your splits. Like, I know, and then talk about the time you ended up running and how that stacked up against what you wanted to run. But you were a metronome. And I think when you spoke to me, you didn't feel like this. But we were tracking you and every 5K was the same.
Yeah.
Pretty much within a few seconds.
So the pacing plan was get faster every like 5 to 10K.
Yeah.
And it was basically work my way down from starting off at 5:20 per kilometer, then work my way all the way down to like 5:05 if I can get there. The one thing that I'm kind of annoyed about, but also I wouldn't swap the experience for like a faster time, but I lost my head in that race, like massively. Mo was so good at the pacing, and every 5K he was like, right, okay, we're speeding up. And for the first kind of, I remember in the first 5K we got to 5K in and I was like, no, okay, let's stick at 5:20s and then we'll speed up when we get to 10K. And then we did speed up and we went to 5:15. And then when we got to 20K, he was like, okay, are we speeding up? Yeah. And I was like, okay. And then we went to 5:10. But I think just because of the nature of it, like they were all pretty similar. And then when I got to 5:10, I just didn't feel, there was something telling me like, don't speed up. It will go wrong if you speed up.
Yeah.
And I'll never know. And that's so annoying. But I think a combination of, I was looking at my heart rate and that was quite high. Like I spent...
What was it?
So I spent, I think, 2 hours in zone 4. And then I spent an hour and 44 minutes or whatever it was in zone 5.
Ooh, okay.
Which, so at that
point...
Your heart
rate is naturally quite... high.
Yeah, my heart rate is quite high. So I was looking at that and I was like, maybe, because I couldn't remember from previous marathons, I was like, maybe it is in zone 5 for a marathon.
Maybe I did the whole thing. Yeah.
Maybe I can do it. But yeah, so that was like slightly panicking me. And my head was just telling me like, don't do it. You can't do it. You're going to... So then I think essentially I was having so many internal dialogues with myself that I was like, let's just stick. So we tried to then just stick at like 5:10 per kilometer the whole way to the end.
I was going to ask you a question about this. I wonder... This is more of a reflection on personalities as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that I could have paced you accurately, and I know you've been taking the mickey out of me for pacing.
Yeah.
But it makes me think back a little bit to you a few years ago, we did Breaking 45.
Yeah.
On the track where you were doing your best to break 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you were paced by a few different people, and then I paced the final chunk with you.
Yeah.
I think my approach, had I been pacing, I wouldn't have asked you if you wanted to speed up.
Yeah, I think that's, and to be fair, like, if I...
I probably would have sped up. If we'd agreed it beforehand, I'd have been like, right, let's go.
Yeah.
Which probably might have been worse though, because then you could have ended up like really hitting the wall and you know, losing 20 minutes at the end.
And to be fair, I think the best thing that Mo did is, so past Tower Bridge, you've got loads and loads of crowds. Then you go into Canary Wharf, it gets a lot quieter. And that bit I found really hard. There was still probably the same amount of crowds that you get at like any other race in the world, but it was just hard because it was quieter. And that's when the doubt really started to creep in. And fair play to Mo, because he kept asking me questions. And I'm sure this will be in the final video as well, of like me just saying, I'm really sorry, I can't do it. And then there was a few times where he was like, what are we doing? Are we speeding up? And I was like, Mo, I need to stop. I can't do it. I'm not going
to,
I can't.
Oh, interesting.
And he was like, so no, we're carrying. Yeah. So I think from his perspective, he was like, okay, well, we're not stopping, but like, we don't need to speed up.
Yeah.
And there were a few, like if you look at the splits, I'm boggled. Like the when I look at the splits versus knowing how I felt. And if you, I think what's going to be really interesting is we're recording this now, like a few days later. The interview that will go into the final YouTube video is literally an hour and a half later.
Yeah, and the guys made you cycle across London back to the studio to film that.
Yeah, right? I just did a casual duathlon. But you can, if you've ever been in a racing situation where you have like doubted yourself or like you've lost your head a little bit, watch that video, because now I can look back at those splits and I can go like, oh, that was actually pretty good. I probably could have sped up. There was a 5:06 there. Why wasn't I speeding up?
Splits.
But like, you can just see that the mental state that I got myself into I need to work on that.
Hey, you still managed to do an interview on the radio with me afterwards.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Can we talk about that for a second? So I finish in a PB, which like...
Yeah, fastest you've ever run a marathon in your life.
Yeah. So I am over the moon. I saw my mum, I saw my best friends, I saw so many wonderful people out cheering, and it was unforgettable, like the best marathon I've ever done.
Are we going to say on here what time you finished with?
3:44:22. So incredible. a sub 3:45, which like I never thought would be possible. I'm just greedy and competitive with myself. I finish, I'm like so made up. Me and Mo hobble over to Horse Guards Parade. We meet up with the rest of the team and they go, oh, by the way, you're on the radio with Rick at 4:40 or like 4:20 or something. And I was like, right, okay. Don't really think that too much about it. We come back, we do the interview literally 5 seconds before going onto the radio. I am bawling my eyes out, crying, like recapping the hardest part of the race. Then I go like, okay, on radio now. I log in to speak to you and we have like a great little chat about the marathon. And then you ask quite possibly the stupidest question you have ever, because obviously your radio station is quite political. And I didn't think about this before we started it. And then you just go, so, whilst you were out on the course, did you pass any of the 22 MPs who were running? And I was like,
did you, Sarah?
Rick, I've got no idea. I passed a rhino. Literally what I said was, I was like, I don't know, but I did pass a rhino.
And then Rick's like, I've interviewed the previous 6 prime ministers.
Great. Yes.
I thought you were great. You're great.
Thanks.
You're great.
Is this the interview for which you had to turn off the Zoom camera?
No, it was just,
oh yeah, that was funny. Yeah, so then I think your producer or whoever like talks to me before you go, for the people before they go on air, I came onto the Zoom link, like teary. And I think it was because of the Wi-Fi signal, but no, they did just go, they were like, we don't need the camera, you can turn that off. And I was like, fair. Absolutely fair.
Oh, you were great, mate. All went well. Yeah. It was good to speak in a variety of different mediums together last week.
It was great. In person was my least favourite.
Anyway, Rick and I are incredibly proud.
Yeah, we are.
You absolutely smashed it. It was amazing and we were emotional on your behalf.
Thanks very much. No, it was very good. And if you get the opportunity to run London or even just go and cheer at London, go along, because it is indescribable. So good. But... onwards, Rick is waving his arms about. This is the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got news stories plus my favourite bit, your questions. And we've got some good ones this week. This episode is sponsored by New Balance and their Run Your Way campaign. Now, me and Andy and Rick have been going along to some of New Balance's community workshops in the lead up to the 2024 TCS London Marathon. And it has genuinely been the highlight of my week.
You were really struggling with your mojo before one particular run club. So you'd missed a workout. You'd had to abandon it because you just weren't feeling it. You were too tired. You weren't motivated.
Yeah, all right. It was a bad week. I get it. But yeah, it was in Dublin. It was on a Thursday night. I had only done one run before that. And I knew I had two pretty big runs to do at the weekend, and it was exactly what I needed. Partying around the streets, dancing to music at the traffic lights. I just kept turning to people and going, is this what every run club's like?
Yeah, people from different walks of life, people all running for their own reason, essentially running their way and not being too hard on themselves about their pace or the way that they run. And that's what the Run Your Way campaign from New Balance is all about, supporting those people, celebrating all of their different reasons for running. So if you'd like to find out more about New Balance's running range to help you through all your running training, then check out the link in the show notes.
Hey Andy, can you do news in a minute?
Well, I can try. Emil Caress, British runner, finished third on the podium in the men's elite race in London Marathon, ran 2:06, massive PB for him. And also he did the entire thing wearing a regular digital watch.
Yeah. This blew my mind. So he wasn't pacing himself. So he just figured
it out.
No, he was pacing,
but you can pace yourself from the mile markers, which is probably more accurate. So he'd been looking at his splits every...
Also, his 5K splits were like within 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah. But also there's a big thing there about running to feel. Like, I guess the fitter and the more highly trained I felt I was in my career, the more bang on I could run a mile or a K or whatever to within a second or so. And so actually, he doesn't have to worry about tunnels or buildings interfering or whatever. He can clock his splits, if he was doing that, by just looking at his watch and his lapse time and then working it out as he passes each mile marker and knowing it's accurate.
Old school.
Yeah, there you go. I think that was less than a minute.
Very good. Questions, Rick.
Okay, so normally the questions come from people who we don't know, but I just looked at this person's name, and his name is Ian Culligan from the Paradise Peninsula, aka the Wirral.
Do you know him?
And Wilmslow.
Unbelievably, this is Podcast Ben's brother.
Oh!
We didn't tell you to put this in.
No,
because
we did not tell you to put this in.
I just genuinely thought this was a good question.
He's Podcast Ben's much better looking younger brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supplier of alcohol free wine, none on the at mile 27.
So Ben is, yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah. So Ian, Ben, Rick, and I all ran together at school.
Great.
I mean, this all sounds a bit incestuous, but this is a complete fluke.
So were you his cross country captain as well?
Yeah. Everyone's.
Everyone's. Everyone. The Captain, whole world.
Captain Emeritus. Captain Emeritus. I wanted to share that your recent episodes about running on the track inspired me to go out to my local 400 meter track, nice. Somewhere I hadn't been for over 20 years since running in the Young Athletes League under 17s. Within about 5 minutes of starting my run, it reignited a fire in me. And when I got home, signed up for an open meeting in Stretford at both the 200 and 400 meters.
Incredible. So I used to run. That's where I grew up. I cut my teeth at the
Stretford.
Stretford, yeah, in Manchester.
In Manchester, yeah.
Low-key ones where you literally just rocked up with your number and were like, I want to run this time.
This is
like,
mad okay. that he signed up straight away.
I just love as well. And then he says, after doing some research, I've now uncovered the master's age categories. And if I can replicate my 2001 PB, it would place me in the UK top 20 of 40-year-olds. So it got me thinking about a new challenge for Andy.
Can he step up to get back to the 1500 meter races for the British Masters and potentially go and represent Team GB
brackets.
One last time?
After brackets. Team GB, it says brackets OAP. Which, no acronyms, old age pensioner.
Old age pensioner, yeah.
Yeah, how long till you get your bus pass?
Oh, I don't know. When do you get that? 55? 60? 65?
I think it's 65.
Now,
so you're not far
68
off.
68 now. 68 now, is it?
60. Oh, I've got to wait a long time to get my bus pass. Thank you very much. And Ian, the short answer is... I don't know. I'd have to look at the rankings. I don't think so. The track, weirdly, I'm motivated to try and run this fast 5K that I've been talking about and faster times over stuff. But I sort of not that motivated to go back on the track.
Really?
The track scares me more. So we did that video recently where I did that 1K time trial in that kind of elite-ish environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was terrifying. But that wasn't even on the track. And I do think going back into the environment on the track would scare me. Plus my knee injury that I've had over the last few years doesn't really like the constant bends. I'm just making excuses to try and avoid comparing myself to the best vets. Because, I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me for 1,500 metres on the track, but one of the guys that came in to see us at mile 27 at the weekend, I think he was third fastest V45 in the marathon. He ran 2:27.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
so Andy,
all of these things seem a bit out of reach.
Believe in yourself.
I do believe in myself.
Anything's
a bit.
Possible if you just believe.
Oh, that well, with you on my side, how could I fail?
Did you two just do a scene from Disney?
Yeah. I was just trying to see if I was nice, whether she'd just do the little Harry Judd whimper.
Absolutely not.
Well played, Ian. That's amazing. I went on his stag do.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Do you actually remember him, unlike Andy's
Yeah, because on my stag do, you spent most of it comatose under a bush.
No,
yeah.
We went to Chester Races. Good stag.
Better than my stag?
I can't remember. No, yours was just as good.
Oh,
equal stags. Equal stags. Very good stag.
What are you looking at?
Oh, just you two are just ridiculous. Right, well, that's it. Although I do have a quick favour to ask.
Yes.
So, you know, we've been doing a lot of debates recently. We actually did a live debate on the last, when we did a podcast at Mile 27, which was very good. I've got another one.
Oh.
Do you round up your runs?
Ooh. So is this running see 4.9K on your watch when you get home?
Mm-hmm. And what are we doing? 5K? Are we doing a lap around the car park? Doing a lap round a tree?
I go to the bottom of the road and back. So yes, I do round up
you
my
do.
Runs. Yeah. So I get to my front door and then I run to the bottom and back, just double backing myself.
Oh, see, I now don't.
So I said, no, really. I spent 20 years thinking, who are these idiots that round up runs?
Oh yeah?
And now I'm one of them.
Are you?
Not always, I didn't yesterday. But during my marathon program when it was very clearly like 8K, 20K, 15K, whatever it would be. I was like, well, I'm not going to do 14.5K when it tells me I've got to run 15K.
Yeah, I do feel like it's a slippery slope as well, like within a training plan. If you go like, well, I've done 4.8, that's kind of like 5.
Let
then the
off.
Next day you're
next
doing
day,
like,
I'll
well, I could probably do 4.6. Well, 4.4. Well, 3. That's the same.
This would be my whole running career as a professional because I didn't have a GPS watch and I never bothered actually measuring anything. So when I said like, I'll run 90 miles this week or 95 miles, it was just like roughly.
Yeah, exactly. We're just
I ran an hour.
I think you ran 10 miles a week. When you were in elite, you were like, that's 90. That feels like it.
That's where we should leave it because Rick's waving his arms at us.
Yeah, email in podcast@therunningchannel.com. Do you round up your runs? And we'll see you and hear you and feel you.
Sarah's lost her mind.
Next time.
Only if you're Harry.
This This episode was brought to you by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite everyday running shoe, which has a focus on both comfort and endurance. So an ultra springy, responsive feel that protects your legs and keeps them feeling fresh, which is what Jess has been putting to the test as she's been training for over the last 12 weeks for taking on her ultimate ever 10K. And she's been focused on consistency. So being able to show up with those fresh legs every day and every week in order to put in the work and the recovery that she needs to do to run her best.
If you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.